Well, we can't really move off a event that grabbed the global opinion last week. The slam down in the Oval Office, or call it what you will, ambush, as those in the ANC are wont to describe it. And it's all at the middle, or rather at the middle of everything, is the Afrikaner, and indeed the AfriForum organization, whose Ernst van Sail joins us today. It was really interesting to me, Ernst, to have a conversation with Corné Mulder last Friday. And I guess you can describe him as the leader, the political leader of the Afrikaners. You guys at AfriForum would be very much the social leaders of the Afrikaners. You've created an organization that Afrikaners feel is out there fighting their corner for them. You've gone one step further. You produce a lot of content. You've actually produced a documentary that caught the attention of Elon Musk. He is, he endorsed it by tweeting it. Do you still call it tweeting on X? Well, we can talk about that in a moment. But how many people have now seen the documentary?
Well, good morning, Alec. A lot of people have seen the documentary, a number that you have to kind of think about for a moment and pause to really realize the magnitude of it. I mean, we first uploaded, okay, so let me just give a quick context of the documentary. So the documentary is called Is Trump Right About South Africa? And the central question comes from the fact that ever since February, when Donald Trump took aim at South Africa, there's been a lot of debates online, and in the mainstream media, a lot of panel discussions, a lot of interviews, a lot of discourse. But at the end of the day, I just realized that everyone is scared about touching this question, this almost nuclear or this radioactive question: is Trump actually right about South Africa? Everyone's talking around this issue. And so we made a documentary where we talked to experts to try and answer that question, but not to get to a point at the end of the documentary where we tell our audience, well, now you know what you think of the situation, but rather we're going to present you with all the facts and you can decide for yourself at the end. And we looked specifically at race laws in South Africa, and we looked at the Expropriation Act, and we looked at farm murders in Kiel de Boer. And we made that documentary, we published it, it did very well on YouTube. It got 150,000 views on YouTube, which was fantastic. I mean, if it was just that, if that was the end of the story, I would have hailed it as a major success. And then a few weeks later, I thought, well, a lot of people on X are asking me to share this documentary on X as well. And I thought, well, on YouTube, it seems to have reached a saturation point. The YouTube audience have all seemed to have seen it. Its views aren't growing as fast anymore. Let's put it on another platform. Let's see how it does. And we put it on X, and it did very well up until the point where my phone just exploded with notifications. I mean, I was just getting lunch, and my phone looked like it was glitching. It looked like it was going to explode, just seeing at the amount of notifications and messages I was receiving. And then I went to my X account and I saw, well, Elon Musk just shared the documentary on his platform to his millions and millions of followers. And today, to get back to your initial question, today that documentary stands at almost 45 million views. That's almost the population of South Africa. The 200,000 views that I was extremely happy with on the YouTube version of the documentary, it just is completely blown out of the water. I don't even know how to react to 45 million views, but that's where it stands at the moment. Major victory for the truth about South Africa. And as I said, with this documentary, we actually went, I'm so glad it's this documentary that went viral, because we went meticulously out of our way to ensure that every claim made in that documentary is backed up either by a footnote at the bottom of the screen that says, here's that information source, or the speaker or interviewee actually references where that information is from. So every single claim in the documentary is backed up by a source on where you can find that information. Because as I always say, don't just believe what I say or what AfriForum says, research what we say and what I say. Go look it up. If I say something that doesn't sound right to you, go check. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm open to being pointed out that people point out that I'm wrong. But you can't just shout misinformation. You actually have to give counter evidence. And up until this point, there's been no refutation of the claims in that documentary, just a lot of shouting from some media figures about misinformation, disinformation, whatever the new buzzword is. You know the drill.
45 million. That's extraordinary. And I guess it brings us to the real story here, that during the Gupta era, when Zuma and the Guptas were reigning in South Africa, no matter what was tried locally, it didn't move anything, didn't move the needle. It was just when the international community started taking an interest. During the apartheid era, whatever was tried locally really didn't make much difference. When the international community got involved, things changed. In this sense, with this documentary of yours now being seen by 45 million people, and of course what happened in the White House last week, it appears as though the international community is now starting to take interest. Do you think this is what is required to spark or trigger the change that it's just so obviously necessary in South Africa, and obvious to everyone, it appears, excepting those who sit in the union buildings?
Absolutely, Alec. When it comes to change happening in South Africa, international pressure, or at least a sober look at South Africa from the international perspective, is absolutely necessary. For too long, for decades now, the ANC and now the ANC-led government in South Africa still has just been, the red carpet has been rolled out for them. They will never be asked challenging questions. They won't be confronted on their race laws. They will never be asked questions about farm murders. If they are asked the question about farm murders, like in, for example, 2018, when Bloomberg asked Ramaphosa in New York about farm murders in South Africa, and he answered, and his words, "There are no murdering of farmers or white farmers in South Africa." That's where the situation ends. No pushback, not even locally, any pushback from the media. I mean, what happened during that event when Ramaphosa openly, just blatantly denied that farm murders are happening in South Africa? The media wrote puff pieces rushing to his defense. Peter de Toey of News 24 wrote a piece titled, "What the President Meant to Say." That's not speaking truth to power. That is covering for power. That is being the PR company of power. And what's happened with this meeting now? Alec, I'm so glad it was broadcast to the world, because imagine if this meeting that we just witnessed last week was behind closed doors, and the only people who were giving us information about how it went were the politicians and the journalists telling us it was a roaring success. But now they can't do that, because the world could actually tune in and see the disaster for what it was. And I welcome it. I think all international liaison, all these types of meetings between world leaders need to have that element of transparency. I think Trump's completely changed the game, because if you don't have that transparency, you're relying on sources that are not unbiased, sources that are biased and biased towards power, biased towards the government, that will tell you that the meeting went absolutely fantastic, and that they're nothing, the relationship has been reset between South Africa and the United States. It was just a roaring success. But now you've seen what happened, and now you have to ask yourself, am I going to believe them? Because if you believe them, then you're going to have to tell yourself, well, then I can't believe my lying eyes.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? We've moved into this whole new environment, and yet there are those who don't believe it. They still think that they are living in a world that they can manipulate. It is a very strange approach, but maybe that happens during transitions.
And you saw as well with this, you've mentioned it a little bit tongue-in-cheek at the beginning of this conversation, the word ambushed. You can't really call that an ambush if a very large portion of the population could predict that it was going to happen. I mean, just from my own personal experience, I was on a panel discussion on CakeNet the week or the few days before the meeting happened between Trump and Ramaphosa. And on that panel discussion, I warned, I told the panel, I don't think the South African delegation would be wise to underestimate Trump. How would the South African delegation respond if Donald Trump presents evidence? Now, in my mind, I thought maybe the evidence he's going to present hypothetically would be a cell phone video. He pulls out his cell phone and he plays one little video, and that's going to be it. That would already be embarrassing, but I couldn't have predicted that it would be a cinematic experience where there would be a screen ready, the lights would be dim, the popcorn would come out, and then Donald Trump would pretty much say, just dim the lights, everyone be quiet, I want to show you something. And what he showed was just unadulterated South African politics. No fancy editing, no music, no weird cuts, just unadulterated South African political rhetoric. That's the political rhetoric that we experience on a daily basis that we know to be true, the visuals of farm murder protests that we know to be true. And what was the South African delegation's response? Deny, deny, deny. And I mean, that was one of the most embarrassing moments, I think, for the South African president. When Donald Trump showed him a real video of a farm murder protest in South Africa, and the South African president goes, "Where is this?" And Donald Trump, the United States president, has to tell him, "This is your country. This is South Africa." His words were just, "That's South Africa." It's absolutely embarrassing because, I mean, there's only two options. Either Ramaphosa is lying when he says he's not aware of one of the largest farm murder protests in the country's history, or he knows that it happened. Well, he's lying and he says he doesn't know, or he is actually oblivious of this major happening, this political protest where there's a banner at the end of that video that was shown of that farm murder protest at the long line of cars that stand next to those crosses. There's a banner that is erected over the road that reads, "Ramaphosa, how many more murders will you tolerate?" He's addressed by one of the largest farm murder protests in the country's history, and he's either oblivious to it or he's lying and he says he's oblivious to it. I don't know what's worse.
In our BizNews briefing today, Tuesday, we've run a clip from the chief rabbi. Now, it is interesting. During the apartheid era, you had religious leaders who were always standing up and speaking truth to power. This, especially Bishop Desmond Tutu. This time round, not so much, excepting it appears as though the chief rabbi has been saying it. And he had some incredibly strong words to say, actually threatening Ramaphosa with the afterlife and saying, you know, when you get upstairs and the big boss has a look at you, you will have to you'll have to account for what's happening right now. It seems excessive to be going to that degree. Do you think it is?
Well, I think what happened this week to the South African delegation and specifically Ramaphosa is just the pot boiling over. It's a pot that's been boiling for many years now, and it's just boiled over now because the people that should have actually turned down the temperature, the people that should have brought stability, the people that should have brought moderation, the people and the leaders that should have put an end to these radical policies, not push for more, that should have put an end to these this radical rhetoric, not defend it and expel more of it, those leaders failed in their mission. And at the end of the day, they thought they could ignore the problem and it will go away. And it simply didn't. All they did was put a plaster on an axe wound. And at the end of the day, the chickens came home to roost, because what happened this week was all those years of denial, all those years of simply looking the other way, all those years of denying what is happening in their own country, what's happening to their own countrymen, even justifying some of the atrocities and human rights violations happening in South Africa. That pot boiled over this week, and they absolutely deserve it. They deserve the disaster that happened this week, because also what happened was they went into that meeting clearly with a massive hubris, a massive self-arrogance, thinking, and I mean, this was the narrative that was being spun in the South African media prior, where they said Ramaphosa needs to go and teach Trump a lesson. He needs to go and put the record straight. He needs to go there and lecture Donald Trump. And I warned, I said, you're not going to win by going lecturing Mr. Trump there, telling him he's an idiot, telling him that he has no idea what he's talking about. That attitude is not going to fly in the Oval Office. But what happened? They sat there laughing. The president's delegation sat there laughing and smirking while videos played on the screen of a major politician with millions of followers that fills 100,000 stadiums in South Africa, chanted about brutally murdering citizens of this country based on their race and based on their profession being farmers. That's what we saw this week. And that's why they deserve everything they're getting. That's why they deserve the heat. They deserve the criticism that's coming their way. And they deserve fiery criticism. They don't just deserve a slap on the wrist. They deserve exactly what they're getting now, because it has been a long time coming.
The business community has rallied behind Ramaphosa. We've felt the cool blasts of it by people saying, hang on, What are you doing? Why are you running with these opinions, these sides of the thing? Why aren't you nation building? Why aren't you helping to support our country, our nation? That we can take. But from your perspective, you've been getting that blast now for how long? 4 years?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. When it comes to standing up against these types of atrocities and human rights violations in South Africa, blatant racial discrimination by the government, it's difficult standing up for the truth. In some ways it's easy, in some ways it's difficult. In the ways that it's difficult is the fact that you get called misinformation peddlers, you get smeared as a propagandist, you get smeared as racists, every ugly little term and buzzword that you can imagine. But at least I go to sleep at night with a clean conscience, knowing that I stood up for the truth every day and didn't have to tell a single lie. I can't really say that the ANC and their allies can say the same thing. When it comes to particularly from AfriForum and the Solidarity Movement side, I mean, we are being investigated for high treason, for daring to embarrass the government on an international stage based on facts, for daring to talk about farm murders, for daring to mention the fact that South Africa has 142 race laws, for daring to say to the world that South Africa, the South African government, is threatening private property rights through the Expropriation Act. And I mean, what's happening particularly with the threat to private property rights is one of the most insidious things that we're witnessing. The fact that for years, for the past, ever since 2018, when the ANC tried and failed to amend the South African constitution to abolish private property rights in this country, they've been saying very explicitly, we are now going to look at other ways to make expropriation without compensation possible. I wrote a piece for BizNews for your platform exactly on that, documenting all these statements and rhetoric from the ANC, from as high up as the president and the deputy president himself, saying the goal of the Expropriation Act is to enable expropriation without compensation. And this is a party that still hails Robert Mugabe and ZANU-PF as heroes from Zimbabwe. That doesn't really fill you with a lot of ease of mind. So then when AfriForum in 2025 again emphasizes, these guys have been threatening that they are going to be expropriating private property without compensation for years, we are met with these, we're shouted down as, you're lying, it's misinformation. They've never said anything like that. Or as was argued on that CakeNet panel by Professor Fenter, he said that they say that, but they don't mean it. Don't believe them when they say that. And my response was just, AfriForum chooses to believe the ANC when they threaten our rights, when they tell people that we're coming for your property, we're going to expropriate your property without compensation. When someone threatens me personally, I believe them.
Okay, so what happens next?
Well, for the past 4 months, it's been just an absolute roller coaster, Alec. I mean, for your platform as well, if you look at the fiery conversations and debates you've also had entertained and hosted, what comes next? I mean, anything can happen, but there are things that are, I think, quite certain. On the one side is there's a massive clash of heads between two forces. On the one side, you have the Trump administration, headed by a man who wrote The Art of the Deal, a man who wants to make a deal, but a deal entails two very important things. A deal entails making concessions, and a deal entails a certain level of humility, being able to admit some things that you've done wrong or things that you are willing to give up. I don't see the ANC being able to do that. Whatever they choose to give up if a deal is reached is going to be defining. And I mean, that was probably what was discussed behind closed doors. I'm very glad that we saw a portion of the discussion there for the public. But there's a large portion of the conversation that was had behind closed doors. We have no idea what was said and agreed to there. If what we saw regarding Starlink a week ago is any indication, hopefully this is the beginning of the end for race laws in South Africa. When it comes to particularly, just to get back to your question for the future, that will all depend on what the ANC is willing to admit in regards to acknowledge, yes, these are the mistakes that we've made, and what they are willing to give up, whether that be the Expropriation Act that is reformed, whether that be the racially discriminatory policies that are rolled back, whether that be actually taking definitive action against farm murders in this country, an issue that they've just been total deniers of, that remains to be seen. But somewhere there has to be a concession. Somewhere there has to be a compromise. Otherwise, there's no room for a deal, because that's the nature of a deal.
But up to this point, we have just witnessed doubling down. It's been a, whenever there has been criticism of some Looney Tunes, and I'm saying that from an economic background, there are some insane policies in South Africa. If you were to ask anybody about a country whose economy has been growing less than the population growth rate, they would very quickly say, you better look at your economic policies, because that is not sustainable. The whole thing will implode eventually. Eventually, the people give up and their tolerance. That's insane. And yet, every time that these get pointed out, every time there's a roadblock, there's a doubling down, which almost suggests that we have to hit some kind of a disaster before we can turn around here in our beautiful country. Is this the do you see a way around that roadblock?
Well, if some of the comments made by Ramaphosa during that disastrous meeting are any indication, I think the South African government is very deeply aware of South Africa's trade dependence on the United States. It's very deeply aware of the fact that the United States, if the United States were to choose to punish South Africa with sanctions or tariffs, would do massive damage to this country. That's not something AfriForum wants to see. It's actually something we argued against when we were there to meet senior officials within the Trump administration. But that what the Trump administration chooses to do is going to be Trump's decision and his experts' decision, up to their discretion. But when it comes to particularly the doubling down that you mentioned there, at some point, in Afrikaans, there's this saying that if you're going to do stupid things, at some point, the only way you're going to learn is by bumping your head, or by bumping your toe, or doing something stupid and feeling the results of it, messing around and finding out. I think the ANC are currently, and the ANC-led GNU government are currently in a finding out phase, where they can no longer just say, well, we're just going to play ostrich, we're just going to put our head in the sand and the problem goes away. The United States is too big of a player to ignore. And I think that the South African government realizes this. So from what I think is going to happen is there might be more extreme rhetoric, doubling down rhetoric. But if the South African government wants to genuinely reset this relationship and minimize the damage of further fallout with the United States, they're going to have to make some policy changes, which I think is very possible. But that's still, whether that's going to happen is in the realm of speculation. But I have a good feeling that even those as ideologically possessed as ANC cadres do see the writing on the wall. They do understand at least that you can't just write off the United States as a trivial player in this game, or as an unconsequential factor in this whole balance of forces. They are actually the force in the balance of forces, one of the biggest forces to be reckoned with. And the ANC understand the balance of forces very intimately. And I think that's going to influence their decision making.
As jy nie wil hoor nie, dan moet jy voel. But I guess
that was what I was referring to, yes.
how much must we feel as a nation? Rob Herseff was saying, don't punish the Western Cape, don't punish the farmers. If you just put a blanket sanction onto South Africa, you will be punishing the good as well as the bad.
Absolutely.
What is your take on all of that? I mean, are we now seeing a move towards somehow carving out those who do not agree with the ANC, and here you don't have to look far geographically, it's the Western Cape, from the rest of South Africa, which may not want to be changing its ways?
Well, at the end of the day, I think the people that are pushing these radical policies, the supporters of these discriminatory policies, the supporters of this radical rhetoric and insightful rhetoric like Kill the Boer, are a fringe minority. I mean, the latest polling that came out just recently showed that the majority of South Africans do not support Kill the Boer and view it as incitement to violence. And a large portion of EFA voters as well. But I mean, you also discussed that on your channel a while back. I really enjoy that analysis. When it comes to particularly the punishment, well, I mean, that's what AfriForum also told the Trump officials when our delegation was there, is that to punish those individuals, those politicians that are pushing these destructive policies, the politicians that are inciting violence against minorities, those politicians that are pushing South Africa towards the brink, those politicians, they need, if there's a punishment coming South Africa's way, needs to be laser focused on those radicals. And we know exactly who they are. It's no secret. And I think that's the path that the United States will take. I don't think Trump wants to punish the South African people. I don't think Trump wants to punish South Africa as a whole. But he wants to make the ANC and the South African government feel some consequences for their radical policies and rhetoric, both domestically and abroad. And that's going to happen. I think that's on the way. And if anything, what happened this week in the Oval Office was already the soft power version of feeling the heat, feeling the consequences. Now, I know what we saw there on display in that meeting, it almost doesn't seem right to call it soft power because it was a quite hard confrontation, but that's diplomatic soft power in play. Having a meeting in front of the world and challenging your opponent in a debate and confronting him with the things happening in his country, dialing up the diplomatic heat, that is a form of consequences. That is a form of punishment. It's not a hard punishment like sanctions or tariffs or anything or the other policies of the like, but it is soft power. And the Trump administration is starting with soft power. But if that doesn't work, if soft diplomatic power doesn't work, then the hard power comes in. And there I can only hope that whatever, if the soft power doesn't work and sanctions are used by the Trump administration, I can only hope that they heed the advice of many voices that have told them that those sanctions need to be laser focused on those radical politicians threatening minorities, inciting violence, and those politicians pushing destructive policies that the majority of South Africans don't even support.
Perhaps we are moving towards the end of the Republic of No Consequences. But Ernst, just to close off with, what about your membership, the AfriForum Solidarity, hundreds of thousands of people who pay you every month? What feedback have they been giving you, given that you've been in the spotlight from many parties here in South Africa, mostly criticized?
Well, firstly, we've seen a surge in new members, which is fantastic. But then also on a personal note, I just want to share, I mean, there can be thousands of politicians and commentators and whatever slandering AfriForum, me and my colleagues, or whatever words they want, calling us treasonous, calling us racist, whatever. All of that fades into irrelevancy when I get a call from an elderly woman, an old tanny, just telling me, Arends, you guys need to keep doing what you're doing. Don't give up. When I get that type of call coming through there to AfriForum from a member or just a general member of the public, all those attacks, all those vicious venom and poisons out there from the ideologically possessed, from the farm murder deniers, from the corrupt politicians, from all the radicals and extremists out there, all of that just fades away. It melts away because that's what matters to me. When that tiny gives me a call and says, don't give up, because I realize I'm representing more than myself. I'm representing something bigger than myself. And that's what puts metaphorical petrol in my tank to keep fighting. And I know it's for a lot of other people, especially my colleagues at AfriForum, it's the same.
Well, we do know that there's nothing more powerful than the truth, and we also know that there's nothing more motivating than serving a higher purpose.
Absolutely.
If everyone believes it or not is kind of irrelevant. The other thing is, of course, the time. How long will it take? I would refer you to Ernest Hemingway, The Sun Always Rises, where he quotes a banker as saying, how do you go bankrupt? Gradually, then suddenly. Perhaps we're getting close to the suddenly phase here in South Africa. Ernst van Sail is with AfriForum. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.